Come here, Susan.
I just want to ask you a question.
Yeah, yeah. You can ask me, mommy. Come on, ask me the question. Come on, Susan, you come here.
All this labor, did it ever cross your mind?
Were you ever disgusted in seeing all the lepers, what they looked like, no. And how the sores?
No, not disgusted, but we felt pity.
Pity for them.
Pity for them.
You never thought, we might catch
it. In the beginning, you see, it was, Baba told us that never shy yourself. Never, because I am there, nothing is going to happen to you all. That's what he told us. So you just freely move with them, there's nothing. But on your own you should not do it. That's what he said to us. So that's how it was. Yeah, there was no feeling of disgust, but we felt really pity for them. The way the wounds would be there, the blood would be trickling, pus would be coming and all that also. Yeah. But we had to help Baba there, so we used to touch their bodies and all that. Nothing happened to us. So far it has nothing happened. I don't know what's going to happen to us.
Okay.
You know, here is Susan Paul. I don't know whether you all know her. No, mm-hmm. You don't know. Mm-hmm. You know her?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's a famous person.
She's my bag. Mm-hmm.
Come here. Okay, okay. You're back.
Okay. Well, my story is that I was in India in 1990 to work in a Tibetan refugee camp with a colleague of mine.
Doing what?
Doing acupuncture, Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
Tibetan refugee camp?
Yeah.
Where was that? In Tibet?
No, it was in Karnataka the first year, in 1990. Yeah. And shortly before I was leaving to go there, I received a call in New York from someone I knew in Massachusetts telling me that there was a family near Bombay that was looking for an acupuncturist. And would I like to come to this small town near Bombay and treat the patriarch of a very large family who had just had a stroke? And that it would be on my way, more or less, to the refugee camp in Karnataka, because I was going to come via Bombay anyway. So after a long period of indecision, I decided to do it, and I came to Bombay by myself at 1 a.m. And I was supposed to go to Pune the following day, and the family was going to pick me up in Pune, take me to where they live. I was going to live with them, and then proceed on to the refugee camp when I finished treating this man. And I only had 3 weeks to stay with them, so I was going to treat him every day. In the airport, I saw a Westerner who looked as if he knew where he was going, and I walked over and tapped him on the shoulder and asked if this was the right line for Westerners. And he said yes, he'd been doing it for 20 years. I said, "You've been coming to India for 20 years? What do you come for?" He said, "Well, I'm a nurse." And I said, "Well, I'm a nurse too." He said, "Well, and I do art restoration." So I said, "You do art restoration and nursing in India? Where do you do this?" And he said, "Well, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to a little town called Ahmednagar." He said, "Ahmednagar?" I said, "I don't know. Is that how they say it?" He said, "What are you doing there?" I said, "Well, I'm going to treat somebody with acupuncture." He said, "Oh, then you're coming to the center afterwards?" I said, "No, afterwards I'm going to a refugee camp." He said, "Then you're coming to the center after the refugee camp." And I said, "What center?" "I don't know what you're talking about." He said, "The Baba Center." I said, "What's Baba?" So he couldn't believe that I was coming to Ahmednagar and not coming for the center. And we had this long, very funny conversation in the airport. And finally he said, "I think I've got it. You're coming to treat this man, and then you're going to the refugee camp, and you're not coming for Baba."
Who is this? John?
And I said, "Well, what's Baba? I don't know what you're talking about." So we talked a little bit, and he said he was leaving that night to come to Ahmednagar. I was supposed to stay overnight in Pune. He said yes. So we took a taxi to Dadar and picked up another taxi, and the whole night, from 3 in the morning till about 8, he talked to me about Meher Baba and explained the whole thing to me, and the whole time my mouth was like, really? Really? And this was Tom Fortson.
So at
one point he said, well, who's this person you're going to treat? And I said, well, his name is Lalji Sarda. And he said, the Sarda family? You're going to stay with the Sarda family? And I said, you know them? And he said, everybody knows them. So I was just, for me, I was constantly amazed that this man that I met in Bombay Airport was coming to the same town I was coming to, knew the family I was going to stay with. And he said, you know, if you like, when you're with them, if you want, I'll come out on my motorbike and pick you up and just show you the tomb. Because this was in April and May, so the center was closed. So he did. And he came out one very early morning, took me to see the tomb. And he wanted first to go up the hill before it got too hot. So it was about 8, and we're walking up the hill, and Nanakare is walking down the hill. Now, I'm just here as a day visitor to see the tomb, you know. So I'm walking up the hill with Tom, and Nanakare puts his arms around me and says, welcome home. At which point, I totally dissolved. I was sobbing. I didn't know what had happened to me. And then we proceeded up the hill. And I really have to preface this by saying that I lived in New York City all my life, and I was a dancer for many years, and I always knew of Margaret Krask's name because of her place in the dance world in New York. And as a child, I used to look for her name in Dance Magazine every month. I would just be drawn to her name, and her name was always in an ad for the Metropolitan Opera Ballet, and there was a black border around her name, around the ad. And every month I would have to find this in Dance Magazine. This is when I was 9, 10, 11 years old, very young. I didn't even know who she was. I didn't know why I was looking for her name, but I was looking for it every month. So we go up the hill, and Tom shows me the inside of the tomb. And it was roped off at that time because he was doing some reconstructive painting in there. So we just stood at the threshold and looked in. And it was very lovely, but nothing happened, and I was waiting for something to happen after what had happened with Nanakare. Then he wants to show me where the graves are of Baba's mandali and the pets and Baba's parents. And at one point he bumped into me, and I stumbled. He sort of tripped on something, bumped into me, I stumbled, and I looked down, and my feet were right at this marker that said, Margaret Krask, Baba's dancer. And I said, Margaret Krask, what's she doing here? And I was totally, what is she doing here? I don't understand, what is she doing here? And Tom said, you knew Margaret? I said, well, I knew her my whole life. I knew who she was, and my daughter studied with her, and I used to pick my daughter up at class, and I didn't know her well, but I knew who she was.
Your daughter studied with Margaret Krask?
Yeah, in 79, and Richard Bolick was the pianist at that time.
So I didn't realize you knew Richard from that.
I didn't. We never said a word to each other then. But he was the accompanist in class. I never spoke to Richard, I never spoke to Margaret, but I used to pick up my daughter. And there I am in India, half a world away, my feet are right at the edge of her tomb. So I totally lost my mind for a few minutes, and I could not figure out what was going on or how I could make sense of all this. And that was in 1990. And after that, you know, we went down the hill. I met Bauji. Bauji was coming to New York in June. He said, you must come and see me at the Ganges. So I did. At the Ganges, he said, you must come to the Northeast Gathering. So I did. And I was very compliant, which is not usually my style. But I just, he said, you must. And I did. I said, okay. And then I came back to India in 91 and went to a different refugee camp in Madhya Pradesh. And in 92, Sushil Sarda came to New York and he stayed with me. And he invited me to come to a wedding and stay with his family. So I came back in 92, I went to the wedding, and I was supposed to go to the first camp again in Karnataka. And Sushil Sarda said to me, you know, after the wedding, you should stay at the Pilgrim Center. It will be Amartiti. You'll like it very much. And I said, okay. And he made reservations for me, and I stayed at the Pilgrim Center only because Sushil Sarda had suggested it, and it was my way station between the wedding and the refugee camp. And when I was there, I received a cable that my clearance to enter the refugee camp had been denied by the Indian government. And this was really devastating. This was the third year, and I had always gotten clearance before, and I couldn't understand why I didn't get it again. And people who were with me at the time laughed, and I said, oh, Baba wants you to stay here. I said, oh, I'm not going to stay here. I've been here 2 weeks already. There's no reason to stay any longer. I'll just travel, and I'll go to Goa or Madras. But I could never get myself to leave. And the company that I used to dance with in New York had done a piece about St. Francis of Assisi for 2 years, every Sunday in Riverside Church. And at that time, Alan was preparing the play for Mira's birthday. And he invited me to be in it. And I said, well, I don't know if I'm going, I don't know if I'm staying, so I really can't take a part. But what is it about? He said, well, it's about the life of St. Francis. Wow. So I said, well, I guess I'm staying. So I stayed and I did the play. And I used to go up to the Samadhi every afternoon and just sit in it when it was relatively empty, because I didn't feel comfortable with darshan, with the line and the prayers. I just was not part of me, and I just liked to sit in there alone. And what happened was, on Baba's birthday, I miscalculated the length of the line. And instead of being able to go in and take darshan and come out and sit on the pandal by myself, which is what I had always done and which was fine, and I was very comfortable with that, there was just one person in front of me to go into the samadhi when Nanakare stopped the line for Archie. This was on Baba's birthday at 5 in the morning, and this voice in my head said, he got me. And that's real. It took from 1990 to 1992 for me to become a Baba lover. But then when I left in 92, the Gujarati Arti was playing in my head nonstop for 6 weeks, 24 hours a day. It never stopped. And then I knew I was a Baba lover. So that's my story.
Yay, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This is amazing. All these things in the background. I
I went to a few in New York in between. I was curious, you know, I was interested, but I would never have said to someone, I'm a Baba lover. But I kept going to meetings to find out more about what it was all about. I went to Myrtle Beach, yeah, and I loved it all, just that I never had had a religious or spiritual component in my life, so I really didn't know where to put it. And it took a while, you know.